Please do be seated. Okay, I'm forming a club. Anyone want to join? Oh, got one, good. Well, before you become too overwhelmed with enthusiasm, I'm going to lay down a few rules. I'm just thinking of them, hang on. Okay, firstly, you have to be an English man. Okay, that's rule number one. Preferably just over 5'11". You have to have a little bit of Irish background and a little tiny bit of Indian. And by Indian, I mean someone from India. Because, of course, none of us should use that phrase, that word, to refer to any indigenous person or group. You must be ordained in the Anglican Church and ride a motorcycle. Oh, and yes, have graying hair. Well, grey hair. Okay, I admit it. And be clean-shaven after having had a beard for some years. Okay? Any takers? Well, that's a bit disappointing. Just me, then. In case you're wondering, just to be clear, my grandfather was born of an Indian mother and an Irish father in Peshawar, which was then part of India, but now is part of Pakistan, following partition in 1947. So that's my club with me. Though I may concur with Groucho Marx on this point, who once famously said, "I wouldn't want to be a part of any club that would have me as a member." All of those ridiculous terms of club membership will feel very familiar to some of those outside our church community, who feel very much that we are a part of a religious club. There are expectations, some of them stretching back many years into different cultures, which still stand in some cases in Christian communities. This is how you dress. This is how you act or speak. You have to subscribe to some form of particular moral or sexual ethic. You have to accept certain truths. You should, in some cases, be of a certain race, or social class, or educational background. You have to believe certain things in a certain way. You have to know what rituals to follow, when to sit, stand, sing, kneel. Most of these rules are unspoken and are upheld without many people realizing it. And many transgress them without realizing it too, thereby receiving the disapproval of the group. Because we as human beings are really keen on creating boundaries around ourselves and our communities. We're keen to know who's in and who's out, and to control membership of our groups. We like to know what being in our particular fold entails and what benefits it entitles us to. And into this comes Jesus. And in today's words from John's Gospel, the early church impression of Jesus. As an aside, there's some debate as to how much of the "I am" statements in John's Gospel are authentically Jesus, or whether they're a historical construct of the Johannine community trying to share a particular view of the divinity and humanity of Jesus. And thereby, by using the phrase "I am," they do so quite deliberately, which is the name of God, as recorded in Exodus, the wonderful name of the Tetragrammaton, Yahweh. "I am who I am," says God. But it also means "I am who I was," and "I am who I will be," and "I am becoming who I am becoming," all combined. Kind of like the concept of God, really. It's a rather slippery word. But then any words we use to talk about God are always contingent, and beware anyone who claims to have a handle on any soul and ultimate truth about the divine. But I digress, often. So these sayings, these "I am" sayings, may be less the words of Jesus himself and more the early church's reflections of the Christ they believed in. which does not, I should say, invalidate or lessen their meaning or impact. These early followers have meditated on the stories of Jesus and the accounts of the life of Jesus shared by those who walked and talked and lived and ate and suffered and shared life with Jesus. So they may not be word for word, but they reflect the nature of the one whom they gave the name Christ, the Anointed, the Messiah. And into a world of tribes and clubs, of divisions by race and culture and religion and education and place of birth and citizenship and empire comes Jesus. And into all of these divisions that we put up between one another, he speaks the words, literally and metaphorically, "I am the good shepherd," which is the opening of today's gospel reading. A rich and vivid image, one which links Jesus the Christ both to the divine, the God who in Genesis, throughout the Psalms, not just the 23rd Psalm, which we heard such a beautiful setting of just now, but throughout the Psalms, the God who in the words of the prophets, including Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, is described as Israel's shepherd. But also, this is a very deliberate link to the human shepherds, both the real shepherds who lived out on the hillsides with their animals, but also the kings, the priests, the prophets, and the leaders who are also described as shepherds, good and bad, of God's people. But this image goes into an even more expansive view in today's gospel, one which speaks out against tribalism and division, and even against empire and colonialism. Jesus says in the words of John's gospel, "I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice." We, with our us and them mentality, with our clubs and our membership, so keen to define the bounds of our sheepfolds and protect and enforce them, are challenged to think differently. Jesus' sheep, those who are beloved and cared for by Christ, are not just those who are in, those who are a part of our community. They are those beyond. And not only that, they have a handle on hearing the voice of the divine. There's no intimation in these mystical words in this passage from John that all of them will name or know the Christ who is called Jesus, but that those beyond the group hear and respond to the voice of the divine and are those within whom the divine can be seen and stirred. No longer do we get to divide people or reject others. We do not get to say who is in and who is out. We don't get to say who can hear the voice of God and who can't, who contains the divine essence and who doesn't. For there are sheep not of this fold, not of this tradition, not of this religion, not of this club. And it's not just a challenge to think differently, it's a challenge to be transformed in our attitude to the other, to be inspired and to be changed. As our reading from 1 John chapter 3 says, to be people of love, who love not just in word or speech, but in truth and action. And the truth of love is that it does not divide us into groups, nor does it consider some worth loving and some not. As monk and mystic Thomas Merton wrote, "Our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether or not they are worthy. That is not our business, and in fact, it is nobody's business. What we are asked to do is to love, and this love itself will render both ourselves and our neighbors worthy." This love, divine love, agape love, doesn't grasp power. It doesn't seek influence. Those who truly love lay down their lives. They lay down those things that they are concerned with, which make them look or feel good. They lay down the trappings of empire and colonialism, of influence, of racism, of sexism, of judging others due to who or what they are. As Richard Rohr would say, and I'm paraphrasing greatly, they lay down the trappings of their small or false self and discover the true self, which is the self beyond ego, beyond fragility, beyond privilege, beyond the need to be right at the expense of others or to hold itself superior to others. And this view of others, this non-dualistic, inclusive, expansive, loving view, leaves us with two particular callings. Firstly, to love in the way that we speak of and act towards others. Secondly, our calling is to learn, to recognize that those beyond our own fold, beyond our own way of being, our own way of doing, our own way of thinking, are hearing the voice of Christ, sometimes even when we're not. And we should be open and willing to hear them, to realize that the voice of Christ is found beyond our own limited sphere, to realize that we are called to still our own voices, which tell us to make sure our opinion is always heard, or that we have the answers, or that we are right, and to listen. This, we are being told by the First Nations, is the way of beginning to work towards what might look like reconciliation. This is the beginning of a journey of walking together, and is exactly what we have been seeking to do in our recent series, to listen, to hear stories, and to learn. We have spent too long as a settler community telling the indigenous peoples of this land how we are going to do reconciliation to them. And we must begin again by listening and learning from them. We have to recognize how colonization has harmed not only the first peoples, but us, as we have learned to be less than fully human in our dehumanization of the colonized. We are learning to live, to listen, and to love again in all of our relationships with First Nations and indeed with all people, especially those whom the church has excluded or dismissed, those not in the fold, members of the LGBTQ2SI community, people of color, the poor, the users, the sex workers, the hungry and those on the streets, the prisoner, the excluded, the persecuted, and the sick, and more. Let us learn again to listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd, even when it comes from those we haven't realized are carrying the divine life and who are sharing the wisdom of God. Amen.